Hello and welcome back to Millennial 8. I'm now here with Censored Anon. Censored Anon is an American... Well, actually, why don't you introduce yourself? I always think it's better if people introduce themselves. So welcome to Millennial.
Glad to be here. Okay. Greetings, everyone. This is Censored Anon. If any of you have watched my videos in the past, then maybe you'll kind of recognize that intro. I am an American content creator. So I originally started out as a video editor and eventually gradually moved into more graphic artistry. So that's what I do a lot nowadays.
And how far back does the story go? When did you first get started?
I originally got started like sometime in like 2019, and it was under a slightly different moniker. My name at the time was Censored Mask, and the Censored Mask was basically a cover I used as my like just for a catch-all for making like graphic designs. And I started out making like vulgar parody T-shirts. Because I wanted to make...
Kind of 2016 energy 3 years later kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I just kind of like... I kind of like, you know, just put a bunch of... I just started like making random designs, throwing them up on like TeePublic and Redbubble. And I created like Censored Mask like to just... to kind of fit everything under there. And the name, the origin behind the name is because I didn't really want to be too pretentious with it. I felt like Censored Mask didn't feel that pretentious. Like, okay, censored because I feel like, you know, I'm censored most of the time in the way that I have to talk to people. And like, I can't exactly always say what I want to say. And then mask because like I'm kind of like hiding behind this mask of sorts. And ironically, it's like, you know, I kind of have a mask when I'm dealing with most people because I'm not always telling everyone about everything I'm thinking. And then I also have a mask online where I tell everybody what I am thinking, but nobody knows who I actually am.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that evolved into Censored Anon, which I think is better. I think it's more... sort of redolent sort of name than because it's a thing that I was I had two ideas for my channel name back in 2013 late 2013 when I was planning it, and one of them was Millennial Woes and the other was Millennial Observer. And
Millennial Observer because you're an observer in the millennial age.
Yeah, I was just like, what exactly? And I meant, and that's the other thing, I meant that the word millennial was supposed to refer to the generation millennials, but it was also supposed to refer to the time, the age. And I guess it was maybe a bit too late for that. But I remember people talking about this is the millennial era because it was, you know, the year 2000. And I suppose I thought that would still work, that it would refer to, well, we are, I mean, we're, at that time, we were still only 14 years into this millennium. So I thought it would work like that, but
I still remember.
It never really did. No one ever took it that way.
I still remember as a kid, like just how like amazing it was to go from like the 1990s into the 2000s. Oh, like it's going to be a new era. We're finally entering the future. Turns out the future is just really freaking gay.
It was awful. I mean, and I've said this many times that the 90s was full of stuff. It was full of things, new, different genres, different aesthetics and all that. Film, you know, you can tell the difference between a 1991 film and a 95 film and a 99 film.
It felt like the culture, you know, was constantly changing. One thing I kind of miss about like the early 2000s, and this even made its way into the 2010s, was like the vulgarity of the humor at the time. It's like nothing was off the table. We were going to say the most disgusting, rancid things ever. We were going to make jokes about sphincters. We were going to make jokes about anuses, anything.
I think that, and the college humor, sort of Hollywood movies, it was always Red Bubble writing, the font, the logo for each of these films. It was always like that. I like American Pie, you know. I think that to some extent was a holdover from the, well, it had been going on in the 80s with Porky's, Police Academy, Caddyshack. Then the 90s, it was still there. And I think it survived, as you say, into the through the 2000s, and then was wiped out in the 2010s by the emergence of the SJW thing. And now it's, you see this stuff.
The rediscovery of morality in America. It was amazing to me because I was homeschooled. So I kind of came from a really strongly religious background, and I didn't really have a lot of friends from public school. So when I met them, their culture was just that. It was vulgar, being ridiculous all of the time, having absolutely no respect for anything, and also constantly dunking on this idea that you could have respect for anything. The idea that you couldn't make fun of something was anathema to them. And I kind of picked up on that, and I'm like, okay, eventually I thought I'm in Rome, I can just do as the Romans do, and I'll just kind of act like them just to fit in with the group. But then they found a moral bone in their body around the time the liberal, the SJW stuff kind of started popping up. And I was like, really? Really, guys? This is the thing that you're going to have respect for, that you're going to break friendships over, is like trainees.
Just so that I understand, what roughly when were you born?
In the mid-90s.
Right. Okay. So just so that I get a picture of which age group you're talking about. I mean, it's interesting about the mid 2015s was definitely a turning point. I think that whole of that decade, really. I saw an article, a web page last night after I'd finished all the streams. I think someone sent me something and that led me to this and that led me to that. And I ended up on this webpage that was listing a bunch of Hollywood movies that couldn't be made now because, and it wasn't even saying it's what a shame that they couldn't be made now, what a shame that we're living under this, whatever. It was saying that it's right that these wouldn't be made now, And one of them was Pretty Woman, which I think was 91 or 1990, where a rich guy elevates a prostitute and shows her how to be classy, how to behave in different situations and all that. Another one is some Ben Affleck thing.
What about Mean Girls?
Yeah, another one's that when he turns a lesbian, some women. Then Mean Girls, I've not seen Mean Girls, I don't know about that, but it was just saying all of these things where some guy is in charge of some woman, basically.
Mean Girls is this very weird movie. It's this girl who her parents were missionaries in Africa or something, so they brought back a lot of African stuff, and so she as a result thinks of things as the high school as though it's the African Sahara, and it's she would have to be black in order for that to be acceptable nowadays.
Oh. Yeah, I think even then, I don't know if they would ever do that now, because the implication is just too strong. And but this is it, there are all these new norms that really are less than 10 years, at most 10 years old, and they govern so much of what happens now and disqualify so much of what happened before and what was regarded as completely normal. One of them actually is, especially the tranny thing. That's actually an amusing one because it's such a, I remember in the 2000s, there were these, that was a thing. It was people would joke about it. Now it's something that is completely out of bounds.
It's, the trannies are the sacred, venerated creatures of the day. You know what's interesting is that I was at a bar the other night, and on the televisions, they had these music videos playing. And in a lot of these music videos, and these are from the 90s, the 2000s, even the 80s, there's a lot of guys cross-dressing in there. You see Eminem wearing a dress.
I thought you were going to say slapping a girl's ass or something.
No, right. There's even in I think it's a Slim Shady song that he's he's wearing prosthetic boobs and a dress, and he's got a wig on, and he's playing the female characters in the little music video. And
I imagine that was seen as a sort of, isn't this a bit weird? Isn't this a bit confusing?
Considering how much people venerated music artists then and how much they venerate music artists now, could it have really gone any other way? because it was like waiting in the background, just waiting to be picked up upon and become the next, you know, social project.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, there are others as well. This article I read last night was particularly obsessed with women not having full autonomy and being dominated by a guy in whatever way, whether it's socially, sexually, psychologically. But then, of course, what is it? What was it called? 100 Shades of Grey, whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah, 50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey.
And no, that 109 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, that comes out and it's just completely, it's weird how this is so out in the open. Same with the pedo stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. We're obsessed and hysterical about pedophilia, understandably. Much when more obsessed reality, than we were in the past. But then at the same time, it's being promoted and sort of normalized. It's very strange.
Like, I would say, like, Kanye, like, recently said in, like, one of his, like, videos with, I think it was with Gavin or it was with Alex Jones, like, anybody who watches, like, pornography is already a form of a pedophile. And I understand what he's getting at there because, like, hey, you're already being sexually depraved in one way. Now, what is there to separate you from being sexually depraved in another way? In reality, you're all just varying degrees of being sexually depraved.
Well, it's not degrees, though. It's also different directions, different ways. I don't think it's a sort of linear spectrum there.
Probably not linear. It's probably just like a...
one thing does enable
it's like another. It's like a rainbow of...
Yeah, yeah, you could say so. Let's get back to your own story.
Right,
I want to cover that. Really.
So going back to like Censored Mask and how it involved in a censored anon. Like the original thing with the mask, I don't think that it was like very like well thought out. So I eventually ended up meeting like a guy who was also a YouTuber. And this was the guy who kind of like encouraged me to start making videos. And that was Just a Robot. I actually used to do a lot of video editing for him. He's an old like anti-SJW commentary YouTuber. And he was like, and I met him like in person before ever knowing like he was a YouTuber or anything like that. We just started talking and like he told me all about like, you know, YouTube stuff. And I was interested in YouTube too because I've always had like some kind of interest in making videos. Like when I was in high school, I used to do this for my church. I would make like videos for my talent show, make these little movies with like the other kids in the church, like about Bible stories. It was very cool, very epic. And I loved doing it. And I wanted an excuse to do something like that again. So, you know, he encouraged me to start a channel and I didn't want to do something with like Censored Mask. I thought like, well, I kind of like the idea of like a censored, like Anon, right? And I took the Anon thing from like 4chan culture, because like I had been like big into 4chan. I had been big into like 8chan when it came about. And I used to go to those boards, you know, V, Pol. Those were my usual dwelling places.
Can you tell me, can you remember what was the reason for the transition from, or why did 8chan come about?
I can actually explain this because I'm a bit aware of the history behind that. So basically a long time ago when Gamergate started, like it basically became the top like thing that people would talk about on 4chan's V and 4chan's poll. So like people were always dunking on like Anita Sarkeesian. They were constantly dunking on Brianna Wu and they were like, you know, Internet Aristocrat was constantly like making appearances there.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah. Nowadays he's just getting into funny drama, you know, with internet fat people, but well, we won't go into that. Basically that was happening. And eventually Moot, who is the owner of 4chan, he was like, that's it, shut it down. And so he basically issued like a rule to the entire website. Nobody's allowed to talk to about Gamergate. And so there was a mass exodus, as it was called, all the way from 4chan into 8chan. And I was one of the people that went with them because I obviously wanted to keep talking about Gamergate. Gamergate was kind of like my first red pill for things. Like that was actually, that's kind of like what actually sent me into looking off into different political views, because at the time I was like, you know, a bit of a libertarian, I think like everybody was. And I was like, well, you know, obviously this isn't working.
Were you one of these, this crowd?
No, I followed Sargon for a bit, but then I was like, this guy is gay. I did not care so much for him.
All right.
Is that on the far left? Is that
that's Kraut, then Jeff Holliday or Halliday, mm-hmm. then Sargon, then V, and I don't actually know who that fifth guy is. But it was just an amusing meme about the skeptics or the liberalists at the time that happened to be in my folder. So I thought it might be relevant to what you were saying.
I kept thinking, yeah, and I hated Kraut. I always thought Kraut was a bit of a he was a liberal. He's just a liberal who wanted to go after people who he thought was racist. And it's like, okay, could you be more annoying?
As far as I understand, he was moaning about Islam. He was, and that was it. He's one of those people, you know.
The skeptic people were like, I'm gonna like, okay, we're just going to say, okay, that's not real liberalism. What we're doing is real liberalism. How about no liberalism? Liberalism is what got us into this place. That's kind of like where I was going at the time, is that liberalism got us into this problem, and liberalism will not get us out of this problem.
Yeah, that's a thing. I mean, you can take whatever you want from liberalism, but you have to understand its limitations. You have to understand the problems with it in order, if you want a hope of using it safely. You know, it's a thing that, it's like any body of thought, I guess, any attitude. It has its uses, but you have to understand the dangers with it. And I think in our sphere, we're probably the only people who really do understand the dangers of liberalism. Everyone else is still locked yep. in the assumption that, well, it's a default way to be. Whether they're classical liberals or modern progressives, they seem to think that
they're just aware of
where it goes, you know.
One's just like an earlier version of the other. And yeah, they think that, well, if we could just have the liberalism of the 1940s or the 50s, then that would be great. Let's just go back to the 90s. Or it's like, no, there's something fundamentally flawed about the system itself, that it is a problem, in that it is a philosophy that, you know, supports like ideologies or like economic systems like capitalism, and and philosophical systems like materialism, and it hinges its wagon to these things. And so they're very easily exploited by, well, people who are in very high places in our society.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just testing Odyssey there. It seems to be a bit glitchy tonight. I'm not sure why.
I wonder why.
It's weird. But yeah, I think that with liberalism, I understand, and I think that it is something that white people are naturally inclined towards. They mostly just don't want to know about what other, I mean, they don't care as long as it doesn't impact mm-hmm. their lives. The trouble is, it always mm-hmm. does in the end. In our age, it does. That's the trouble, because of the mainstream media, because of the education system, because of the corporations and the NGOs. Nothing is just left alone. It's always this constant push of these ideas. And so there is no sense of proportion, really. But sorry, I inadvertently prevented you again from telling your story.
Oh, no, it's okay. I do appreciate the trail-offs, too. It makes a conversation feel natural, you know? Like I was saying, like with 8chan, right? So after like Gamergate happened and like everybody got kicked out over there and continued the conversation with Gamergate there, while I was there, I was like curious as to like, oh, like what are the reasons for this happening in general? And, while I was on that site, I was exposed to a lot of Iron March, graphics at the time. And, Iron March, as you very well know, I'm sure, it was a forum that billed itself as a global fascist fraternity. And so
I actually didn't know what it was.
Oh, really?
I've heard of it, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays it's long gone, but, on that site, like, I was interested with the graphics, because the graphics that they were creating were just really badass. Like, these amazing infographics, like, explaining, like, the entirety of the Nuremberg trials, explaining why liberalism is bad, explaining why, actually, the alt-right is not real fascism. This is real fascism. And so I was like, whoa, wait a second. This is, like, really badass. But I'm not so sure about this Hitler stuff. So I just kind of like went over to the site and I started reading more and more and more. And it certainly helped that like a lot of the people of that site were kind of like, they were like graphics guys, Slavros and Zeiger. If I could ever shake their hands for like what they did for me in terms of inspiring my aesthetic, I would love to, because these guys are behind a lot of the major like art trends in the dissident right. Like, you know, Siege graphics, kind of like that stuff came out of Iron March. Anything to do with like vaporwave aesthetic, that even came out of Iron March, I would argue. The grunge, like black and white posters even the red, white and blue posters that you see from like organizations like Patriot Front, for example, like all of that has roots and origins in Iron March's Iron March's art direction. It's kind of like nowadays, like Bauhaus, like that is the root for modern 20th century like art direction. Like that Iron March is basically the Bauhaus of the dissident right. And a lot of people will hate me for saying that, and I don't care. Fight me.
All right. So it was that an old fashioned bulletin board style forum?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Right, okay. I have some affection for that format. It's a shame that it's sort of passing away, because I
totally agree, man. It's like, I did like that, because it felt like it was sequestered off. It was something different, and it wasn't designed to just catch your, like, attention and focus it on, like, scrolling forever. No, it's like, you had to, like, sit down, think about what you're going to say, write it all the way out, and then just... you know, put it in your post. You had to be a lot more thoughtful, a lot more considerate, and you had to, like, you know, be purposeful in what you were doing.
Exactly. It encouraged a certain thoughtfulness. It encouraged a certain level of care that just isn't there in a real-time chat. And, you know, I like real-time chats, but I like that as well.
Yeah.
And so I hope that they don't fully disappear. I think they definitely have a use.
I don't see us ever returning to a time like that, because it's just like, I feel like everybody's like geared towards this, like, you know, bullet storm takes. And this is like, this comes from like, obviously Twitter, like most people, like, okay, it's just like, throw these little takes out there. And then Telegram is kind of like that, because it's primarily a mobile, app, but fun fact, you can also use Telegram on your desktop, and it works just as fine, by the way.
It's probably the program I use more than any other.
Yeah.
The desktop app is fantastic.
Yeah. I got rid of my smartphone in April, and so I've basically had to rely on like stuff like that for my laptop. So I don't use any apps on my phone, because obviously my phone does not support any apps.
All right. Okay. I have heard about people doing this, a sort of move away from smartphones towards, you know, the old Motorola's, the Nokia back in the day. Would you say, and I do think this, that the smartphone really changed it all.
It did.
You know, I went into a sort of entombment back home. I was living back home from 2006 to about 2016, I guess you could say, with the channel starting 2 years before that. And in that time, the world outside really changed a lot. So certainly the second half of that era, from 2010 to 2016. And the main thing was the smartphone and Wi-Fi. And so when I sort of emerged back into the world, so much had changed. And it was weird, actually.
Here's a couple of things. The smartphone ruined the internet, because it gave like everyone who otherwise would have to like do some work to get to the internet, and it put it right in the palm of their hand. So like during that, this is a well-known phenomenon, I think, to like anybody who is on like the chans back then, is that like when smartphones like got really popular, like lots of people started coming to like 4chan and 8chan and all these other chans, and they were called phone posters for a while. And they just like, you know, they severely lowered the quality of the discussion. Not to say that there was very high quality discussion going on chan boards. There's not very high quality discussion, but it definitely, but it's an impact that isn't just limited to the chans as well. It's just, it gave everyone access to most areas of the internet, and it created like a homogenization, especially with the advent of social media in the way that we know it today.
Yeah, social media. I mean, I remember MySpace, and then there was what was it called? There was a rival thing like Bebo. I think it was Bebo. Something like that. Bumble. Something like that.
No, Bumble is a dating app.
All out. So it's not Bumble then, I'm thinking. But I think it was Bebo. And then Facebook just wiped it all out. And that became the massive thing around about 2005, six.
That's the big daddy. That's the grandpa that is still like alive to this day. Still alive and still destroying relationships. So...
Yeah, I was looking for a Zuckerberg meme there. I've got loads of Zuckerberg memes. But yeah, I think everyone understands. don't think there's any need to illustrate the menace of Facebook.
But speaking of ideas and chans, right? When I was choosing Anonymous, right? One thing I noticed about like chans was that nobody ever had an identity, right? It was, everybody was you were determined by the quality of your posts, and it was like, well, a complete meritocracy in that regard. So like, it didn't matter if you had a name, right? If you had a name, you were a fag. So. You were an anonymous person, right? And I found something like really virtuous about that, you know, I wanted to like incorporate that into what I was doing. And so I was like, I'm censored anon, you know, I'm a person, I'm a character with a distinction, but without it at the same time.
Yeah. I think I understand. See, this is something that I never had much, any experience of. I've never posted on any of the chans. I'd never even seen them until about, I don't know, 2015, something like that. I'd heard of it, but I was never on there. So it was I never understood it really until sort of retrospectively, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think like I started sometime in like 2014, and I was first exposed to it by my friends from the local public school, funny enough. And then, you know, that was around the time I was gradually adopting that humor, and 4chan kind of just fit into that, you know?
So would you say that there were many kids at your school who were into this stuff, and are they still into it?
Everybody who was a nerd, at least, was into it. I've always kind of like fit into that like nerd culture, you know, just being a weirdo, having strange interests, you know, caring about like these fairly ridiculous things like video games and anime. I didn't really care for anime at the time, but like I gradually grew to enjoy it as a result of you know, being with my friends. So
it's quite alarming how much crossover there is between anime and you know, the alt-right and so on, and the chans.
I totally understand it. I mean, I think you just, I mean, if once you find the right anime, then you're going to be like, oh, wow, I can't, where's this been in my life? where's the delicious simulacra that is the anime woman? She is the platonic form of the woman, clearly.
Oh, I remember a thing on TRS years ago about some guy going on about how 2D women are superior to 3D women. it was a big thing at the time. So is there any more to your chronology?
So, yeah, the colors I chose for censored Anon are actually based on Iron March colors. So Iron March sported, like, an orange, dark orange, a gray, dark gray, and a black. And so I incorporated that color schema into my design. And as a result, my favorite color is now orange. And so, like, my logo also underwent an evolution, too. So, like, initially, like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's this character that is, like, the Anon from 4chan. And the Anon from 4chan is usually, like, this guy in a green skin suit, and he's wearing a suit, right? And there's, like, various, you know, fan art, you know, made about it. And, like, I took, like, this one piece, and I was like, well, he's green, so I'm going to make him orange to represent me. Well, I did that, and then that wasn't very original. So then I just kind of evolved into, like, an emoji, so like the thinking face emoji. And then I kind of, like, went, like, you know, 180 almost, and I came back to the mask, right? And so I made the censored Anon into just the mask again. So it's like a callback to the original censored mask into what it is now.
Was that linking to the Occupy movement in any way? Are we consciously referencing that or not?
Nope. I was referencing, like, when it came to, like, masks, I was mostly referencing, like, Iron March and a lot of the people from that site. Like, one thing that you'll notice if you looked into any of the groups at the time, and this is still, like, a thing today, is, like, a lot of dissidents, whenever they go they go to a protest, they wear masks, right? So, and skull masks were really popular at the time back then, and balaclavas were too. And so the original censored mask was based off of a balaclava hood. I took the eyes off of a balaclava hood that I made for the icon that I have right now, and just translated that over to just being more like a traditional wooden mask rather than, a cloth mask that you would put around, you know, your face, like a gator mask.
Okay. And is this when you started making videos of your own as Censored Anon?
That's right. So, when I started out making videos, like, I did ask myself the question, what am I going to make videos about? And I was like, well, I don't feel like I'm an expert on really anything. I feel like anyone who can say anything that I could say could probably say it better. So I'm just not going to talk about anything that, I could be like, you know, I could be proven to be very uneducated on. So, or like where somebody could have done it and could have done it better. So I was like, well, what thing can I talk about that I do have an authority on? Right. Well, I can talk about my experiences. I can talk about, you know, things I've witnessed in my life. I can talk about stories I have in my life. And so that's kind of like what I started out doing with my YouTube channel, is that I just started writing stories based on my experiences. So I was writing stories that were based on powerful and true events. And I started to just write these things out and like pour my heart into them and then produce videos from that. The way that I got my style, I was inspired by Black Pigeon Speaks a lot. I really liked his aesthetics because he always had like this really clean, crisp videos that incorporated like a lot of stock footage. And so you'll kind of see like, in like the corner of my screen here, like there's a video playing, one of the ones I've made in the past, and like it's rife with stock footage. So a lot of the stuff that I was making at first, it was just made with stock footage, and that was partly also because I wanted to remain anonymous in my stories. And part of the thing about a lot of the stories that I was like trying to tell with people is that, you know, I also don't feel like my experiences are like extremely unique. I mean, I obviously think that people can relate to a lot of the experiences that I had and maybe take something from them. So like my stories, like they're very like abstract in a way, but personalized to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's the best way. That's the best way to do stories. It's something that comes from your own experience, but you've made it generic in a way. enough that other people can understand it and grasp it and get right. something from it. I mean, that's if something is too esoteric, it's going to be meaningless to everyone else. So extraneous details can just serve to, you know, alienate people, I think.
I think so. I think so, too. And one thing, you know, I wanted to do, especially like as I kept doing this as a creator, was that I wanted to be able to disseminate like some complicated ideas into my work, because like complicated ideas are kind of like what explained and made sense of the things that I went through. And so I was like, okay, I can probably like, you know, break things down, explain them, and use the stories of my personal experiences like to like disseminate these thoughts and ideas. In the video that I have like on the screen right now, like in this video, I talk about like how maybe having too much knowledge about things is a bad thing, and how other people's actions can influence and affect, you know, you and other people. And maybe it would be the case that if some people didn't know certain things, that they wouldn't act certain ways, and maybe that's a good thing.
Well, indeed, we've got this again. It's a liberal idea that the more knowledge, the better. The more info, all knowledge is valuable. And the thing is, all knowledge is valuable, but it has to be handled safely. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. So it would be better if they just didn't have the knowledge in the first place, so that they could misuse it.
Yeah, one thing that you get harped on a lot by other people is that, well, if they just knew better, then they obviously wouldn't do it. Well, have you ever considered that maybe that people would know better and then they would consciously choose to do the wrong thing?
Because yeah, people, they can convince themselves of anything. Okay, so right. This thing is dangerous, but it won't be dangerous for me. I've got a good reason to do it and whatever. So it's rationalization. I mean, one thing I did get from, and I got a lot from Theodore Dalrymple, and one thing was, you know, despite his flaws as a writer, one thing he said that was very valuable was, man is not so much a rational creature as a rationalizing creature. I think that's very true.
Yep. Yeah. Because it's very easy to do things and say how it's good for you to do them. And then like when bad things happen to you, then rationalize, well, actually I had to go through that. Actually, that was something that I had to do. You know, that's one thing, like when I engage with regret and guilt personally, like I, you know, it's like I ask myself, did I really have to do that stupid thing? Did I really yeah. have to go and sleep with that, you know, that girl? That was not a good idea. That was that turned out terribly for me. So I probably shouldn't have done it. There's no point in just, you know, looking back and just, or like, you know, taking it now. It's like, well, I want to feel better, so I'm just going to say that I had to go through that so that I could have stopped doing it. It's like, no, it's the case that you did something and it was stupid and you should regret it and you shouldn't have done it ever.
Yeah, and you should feel bad about it.
You have to live with the anguish of regret.
Yeah, and realizing what that means about yourself, which, and it's not the end of the world. You know, it's important to say this. I mean, you don't need to fall into an endless spiral of self-analysis, but it is something, you know, when you've made a mistake, you should analyze why you did it. Therefore, you'll know how to avoid doing it again, falling into that false rationale.
Right. And you also have to realize that, you know, you're not the one who's going to be responsible for absolving yourself of sins, right? This is why I'm a Christian, is because I sincerely believe that, you know, God is the one that is the forgiver of all sins, and that we can't be forgiven of ourselves of our sins, not by ourselves, not by others, without Him and His forgiveness. God is not only a model for perfect forgiveness for ourselves and for others, but for like all of humanity. It's like all of mankind is made perfect through Him, and that is only that, and that is and is only through Him that we become perfect.
All right. I mean, I'm not a Christian myself, but it is Sometimes, and certainly in the past, I've wished that I could be. I wish that I could believe in God. And I mean, I kind of do believe in God in the sense that I feel that everything is meaningful. Everything. Mm-hmm. So
I definitely think you could if you went to church enough and you talked to God enough.
Maybe. I'm open-minded about that. It's not something that I would run from. It's not something that I would run to. I feel okay about it. Either way, at least for now. So is there anything you'd want to say about that?
With videos like and with like faith as an underlying like motivator throughout all this. So there was a time like in my life, because I've mentioned before that I was like very religious when I was growing up. Well, there was a time in my life where I kind of went through like a drought period. My church fell apart. I didn't like attend church after that very much. And for like a year or two, I was like, oh man, I'm just going to not think about this right now. And that was, and it was actually like me making videos again. And I made a video like called Where I Am With My Faith, where I kind of basically, said that same thing that I said in video format. And somebody reached out to me through Discord and they were like, man, I really don't think that you should stop, being a Christian or reading the Bible. We were thinking about starting Bible study. Why don't you join us? And so I started like doing this Bible study with them. And to this day, like weekly, I do a Bible study with these guys. And it really kind of brought me back to the faith as a result of that.
What would you say to people and try to bear in mind British hate speech laws when you reply to this? What would you say to people who say that Christianity is a foreign religion to Europe, to European man, and basically a trick?
I would say that for the last 2,000 years, or you could say 1800 or even 1500, right? That the majority of Europeans were Christians, and they wouldn't have adopted that religion had they not seen themselves that there was something very true about it. And them adopting Christianity has then like all the way through to even like just a few generations in recent memory, that has been the consistent theme for our people, that we are Christians. We come from different traditions. Maybe some of us are Orthodox, some of us are Protestants, and some of us are Catholics, but we all are Christians. And I think that's part, I think part of that is that, we all of us kind of recognize that there was like some kind of something deficient about our native pagan cultures, and that there was something that was there that was better about Christianity.
All right. I mean, I do think that there's this argument that it was invented so as to weaken the Roman Empire and weaken European land.
I've heard that argument from, sorry to interrupt, but I heard that argument from Adam Green before, I know.
Just doesn't ring true to me because,
look at the highs that we reached as Christian Europe. We look at the highs we reached as Christian America. Some of the finest empires, the largest empire ever was a British Empire, and it was a Christian empire. The majority of these countries that have come about and become some of the finest powers in the entire world, and achieved amazing technological feats, they were all Christian societies. Like before that, they weren't none of the pagan societies achieved that, except maybe Rome, you could argue.
Yeah, well, this is what I was going to say. I don't really think it's a good argument against Christianity. I know there might be others. Other arguments, but this one just doesn't ring true to me because, as you say, it didn't weaken us for 1500 years. It didn't weaken us. So it's a strange trap that if it takes 1500 years to act. But at the same time, I can see the line from Christianity and turning the other cheek, worship your neighbor as yourself, and all this. I can see the line from that to modern progressivism.
Right. Yeah. And I think you can kind of see that in the way that we all like basically understand Christianity today. But here's the thing. I also noticed that a lot of people who think they know about Christianity are also very ignorant about it. And that's not to say like, oh, like all these things like that are read in the Bible are not on their face, you know, the true, the truth and, you know, the way that we should do things. But there's also like, how do I say it? Like there's a complexity to it. There's a rationale to it. And there's like a deposition and a time and a place. What people like to do is that they'll take these like things and say, oh, turn the other cheek. That means that you should be a total pacifist. You should never defend anyone. Even if your wife is being killed in front of you, you should never stop her from being murdered because you're supposed to just turn the other cheek. Or, you know, some, maybe that's a little dishonest. Maybe it's like, oh, if they're trying to kill you, just turn the other cheek and just die and something like that. And it's like, no, that's unreasonable and it lacks nuance. I mean, because obviously, like even going back to our great grandpas, that's not what they thought. You know, that's not what my American ancestors thought. That's not what my Texan ancestors thought. That's not what my German ancestors thought.
I wonder if any Christian ever actually behaved like that. You know, took it so much to heart that he just I just won't fight back against anything. You'd rape my wife. I'll just turn the other cheek. Whoever actually behaved like that?
Very few small segments of Christians. I think the closest thing that you can get to that is maybe Mennonites or like a very niche sect of Mennonites, Primitive Baptists, or I might be wrong about all that, but I just know that there are some very small sects that believe that in Christendom.
All right.
But that there's one more thing I wanted to add to that, and that was like one thing that's important to me about being a Christian is the fact that it is a part of my lineage, right? I couldn't tell you a single ancestor, either in living memory or as far back as I can dig into family history books, that was something other than a Christian. I mean, the worst you get is lapsed Christians and Christians, and that's it. So, you know, my faith, Christianity was important to my parents. It was important to my grandparents. It was important to my great grandparents. It was important to their parents and their parents and their parents. So, like when I'm worshiping God, I'm not only worshiping God, you know, by myself. I'm worshiping God in solidarity with all of my ancestors and the people who came before me.
So it's something that links you to the past and to your ancestors, your lineage.
Right.
Something tangible. And I think that is important. I mean, we live such atomized lives now. And this is the thing about popular culture. It's so ephemeral. It's so trivial, transient, meaningless, and seems to glory in that. I mean, I think that the ideal consumer today is someone who really just does not have a past.
Someone who has no past and no future. Someone who has no past and no future, and they basically have like an identity which they manifest. They choose through consumption. So, you know, today I'm a gay person. That means I need to buy these things and I need to participate in this behavior and I need to be with other people who are gay too. And basically anybody who's not choosing to be anybody who is gay is therefore my a part of my community, quote unquote. It's
trivial identities.
Right. Ones that are based on consumerism too.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's just a silly thing. And I remember people moaning about goths and like the Marilyn Manson sort of era when they would say it's just something that is off the shelf. It's just something that you have bought. It's meaningless. That kind of era, like late 90s. And I think that is true of most subculture. It's a thing that most subculture is at once very demanding of you in these trivial ways, but also very lenient in other ways that are perhaps deeper.
Can I tell you about something nefarious, you know, that I've noticed? And I'm going to preface this by saying that, like, I obviously do not mean any insult by saying any of this. It's just an observation that I've made. So when I became interested in Orthodox Christianity, One thing I noticed that a lot of people were doing is that they would buy a lot of stuff in order to signify that they were Orthodox. Like, you know, somebody got an Orthodox cross, they bought an icon, they bought a Bible, they bought, bought a prayer mat, a prayer rope, and I'm like, this is not right. Like, you shouldn't need these things in order to communicate with God. If you're seeking first God, right? Do you need to buy things? No. In fact, that in itself is like trying to transform Christianity itself into this consumer identity that just, you know, ropes you into buying things. And I felt those pangs myself, like, oh, I should buy these things. I should do this. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that at all. I'm just going to focus on trying to live out the virtues, try to pray, try to read, try to understand. Like, and that's not to say that I'm better than anyone else, but like, I see like this like commodification of even like, you know, sacred identities into like consumer identities.
Yeah, and it's something tragic. There's something very vacuous and hollow about consumer identities. The things that people, the clothes that people put on, the costumes, and then suddenly they expect to be a thing. They are something special. There's something meaningful because they're now this thing. This is all, I mean, again, it's like the end of civilization kind of stuff where people are out of contact with something more challenging, something more meaningful.
It's it is because like, yeah, people are rootless and atomized. Like they don't have any actual connection to the people around them and to things that would ground them. You know, when you're like, I don't know what my identity is. Okay, you need to take a step back, realize who you are, where you come from, and these aren't abstract, you know, questions, right? Who's your mom? Who's your dad? Who's your grandparents? Who's your lineage? What state are you from? What city? What country? What race are you? What religion does your family hold to? What you know, all these things. These things identify who you are. You don't need to make it up yourself. Like growing in these things, of course, and maybe even developing in different directions. Like that's one thing. But knowing who you are first is, well, integral.
Oh yeah. And what you end up with instead of that is the consumer who's just madly trying different things and always hoping for the best. And I don't think it really works out. I mean, what would you say about I'm sorry to bring this in rather clumsily, but it does seem relevant. What would you say about the whole COVID saga? Because I think that was partly a search for how to be a good person. I think that's one of the reasons people latched onto it.
You know, everybody in America really wants to be moral, and that's like their primary thing. They want to be moral, and they want to moralize to other people. But liberals do this as well, and they're really the number one people that are doing it. So during the whole COVID thing, it you know, in a lot of ways, it became like a litmus test for whether or not that you were a good person. And so if you were doing all these things, like, and this is kind of contrite as a take, I think, but like if you're getting vaccinated, if you were wearing the mask, you know, it's not only that you were a good person doing good things, but it was a statement. It was a statement that you are a good person who is in fact doing good things. You know, that's why we saw the pictures and, you know, some cases the tattoos, you know, of people like going and participating in this kind of behavior.
And I think you see a similar thing now with the Ukraine stuff, with wearing the flag and the avatar.
They buy the flag. They buy the flag. You know, they put the gay flag out in their yard. You know, they put the gay flag. Then they put the pride flag. And the gay flag is a Ukrainian flag, by the way. But
I think that the alt-right, for want of a better term, I'm just going to use that for convenience. Hmm. That's ironically a subculture that it actually costs you to be part of that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and that's part of its appeal for some people, but it's also part of what makes it more real.
I think that's true. And I also think that it's a big problem that people would look at the dissident right or the alt-right as like an identity that you just kind of like, you're defined by what you consume. Because if you're just saying like, oh, well, I'm all right, and these are the guys that I listen to, and they tell me what I need to think, you're kind of like still a consumer, but in a different way. I appreciate like the, and I'm not trying to dunk on anybody for listening to podcasts or anything like that, but it's like you have to truly understand or really try to understand the ideas for yourself in order to kind of consider yourself a part of this or do something and contribute in some way. Don't just be like a passive viewer, you know?
Yeah, and this is something that I try to encourage in people. But I think most of all, it's more important that people have full lives. It's more important that they at the end of it all, they're going to feel satisfied. They're going to feel that they did what they could, whether that's political change in the world or being part of a subculture or a religion or not, actually. I think that there's a certain danger in placing all of your eggs in, okay, I am now this thing. I am an activist.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you end up with, or you can end up with, a person who is really not a very well-rounded person, but they've got the political activist. They've got the ideological, they're an ideological Dalek, you know, they've got the ideology right. And so it doesn't matter that their life is a mess. It doesn't matter that they don't have friends, whatever, you know. I think that's a certain danger, which applies to a lot of subcultures, things that people can get into. It becomes the whole of their life when it shouldn't be.
I think that, sir, is what you call coping. Like, it's like, I have a shitty life, but I'm going to be the best activist there is. You know, it's like, no, yeah, you're right. You do need a full life. And I think if you come to this area, what you need to believe in primarily is taking responsibility for things. And like, part of it is like, if you're in the dissident right, like, you want to take responsibility to some degree, right? You want to take responsibility for your nation or your people. You want to take responsibility for the role that you play in helping them. And how are you going to do that if you yourself, like, you don't have yourself in order? You need to put your own life in order first, your personal life, your things, you know. And obviously, this is very Jordan Peterson-esque, but it's true that you need to restore your life and that you need to, like, actually, like, get involved with other people in real life and, you know, do what you're called to do. Like, if you have the capacity to be a father, then you should be a father. If you have the capacity to be like a very important person at your church, you should be that person. If you have the capacity to be a good worker at your job, and then you should be that good worker. Or even, you know, even better, make it into management and hire our guys. You know, be someone and do something, and not just on the internet and not just with political activism.
Yeah, I agree. So let's get back to the story, because you were making these videos, telling stories from your life. And what is the next phase of this?
Well, so, you know, around the time that I was making videos, like, you know, originally I started off making videos, helping make videos for somebody and also making videos for myself. Well, other people like started to notice this over time, and other creators started to reach out to me and say, hey, you know, you're making these videos. They look really good. Why don't you come and edit videos for me? And so, like, one of those people that I did it for was, you know, Keith Woods. So I started producing a couple of videos for him. I produced a couple of videos for a channel by the name of Antunes. And then I also produced videos in the past for Zoltanus. And so that was what I was doing, especially mostly in 2021, especially in the latter half of the year. And eventually it was great. Like, I had a lot of fun producing videos for all those people, and I obviously had some problems here and there, because, like, I was getting really overworked. One thing I learned was that when it comes to making videos for other people and they don't have all of the basic stuff that comes along that you're going to be putting in the video, you have to find that stuff yourself. And that is like a full-time job trying to find all the material that you need for a video.
Oh, God, tell me about it. I mean, a lot of this, this is one of the reasons why I didn't make videos like that, because I knew it would take a lot of time to find the damn stuff, the material.
See,
but people don't realize how much goes into this stuff.
I know. I was doing like really highly produced videos for a while, and I was just like, you know, pulling at straws, just, you know, trying to find something new that I could put in the video. And, you know, eventually I started like creating my own assets and like creating my own stock footage, and that kind of like eased the burden for myself. But a lot of the people that, you know, were hiring me were like, oh yeah, just find everything. And it's like, well, how am I going to find everything for an hour and a half long video? I'm going to charge you $600. You understand that? Like, you're driving me insane here. So I kind of got burnt out like on doing a lot of video stuff. And so like I took it easy. I also moved states. But were you going to say something?
No, I was just listening. I think that it's one of the troubles with being a content creator, when there's a lot of pressure, when you're quite prominent and you have a lot of ideas, you have a lot of videos to make. And one of the problems there is that there is just only one of you. And if you were in the industry, you'd have a whole team around you. And sometimes there were times when this really got to me, and I was thinking, fucking hell, I'm doing everything on my own. Because as an E figure, that's you are on your own, and it is a difficult thing. I mean, I understand. So go on.
Sorry, bro. Tell me about it. Like that is exactly what I was feeling. Because like I noticed like a lot of YouTubers, like they did like hire out for their videos.
I'm sure that bigger YouTube, like someone like Vosh, mm-hmm. when there's loads of money coming in, I'm sure they must be employing people to do stuff, to do research for them, to do gathering images, whatever, and to do editing of videos. I'm sure they must, and a PA and all that kind of stuff, because it's just fucking overwhelming.
Well, here's another thing. You look at like what Vaush puts out on a regular basis as well.
I mean, I don't want to make this about Vaush, but you know, I use him as an example.
I know, no, I mean, I'm saying the content, not really like, you know, the ideology or anything like that. But I'm saying that this is something that he's doing right, and that a lot of people who want to produce a lot of content will do right if they do it. Okay, he is recording himself. Okay, so he's got all of his A roll already. Now he just needs his B roll. And so what does he do? He pulls up stuff as he's going along. So he's getting his B-roll while he's recording his A-roll. And as a result, like, he's able to just clip that out and throw that up on YouTube. So like if you're somebody who's making videos, right, and you want to make really good produced videos, you need to start incorporating like your own original footage. And so whether that be recording yourself, and if you want to remain anonymous, there's plenty of ways to do that. AI is so good nowadays that you can actually just you can like basically key a Gaussian blur to your face just like, you know, put that over the whole video and you're not going to be revealed. I mean, maybe somebody could recognize you by your body shape, but there's also other camera angles that you can take advantage of in order to not reveal like exactly what you look like, silhouette play and all that. In a lot of my videos, actually, there's a lot of videos I made, especially my later videos, where I'm there, I'm in the videos, but you can't actually like see my face. You can't make out who I am exactly. It's always blurred. It's I'm off in a distance, or, you know, something like that. So there's ways of going about it while keeping your anonymity that, you know, you can do. But like whenever you're creating videos, you need to be creating like the footage to go along with it, because you're working with a format that is video at the end of the day. And so if you're not going to create it, you have to get it from somewhere. And then the somewhere usually kind of sucks.
Yeah. I'm often surprised because I knew Adobe After Effects back in the day. I knew Adobe Premiere. I don't know it nowadays. It's changed so much since 20 years ago. I knew various software and I know it very well. I still use it now. I used it for the millennial intros. It's often surprising to me to find out how other people, other content creators, are actually using very basic stuff to do their videos. Was it Windows Movie Maker, things like that? Yeah. Because they don't have the skills. And I know that one of them certainly started with things like that, and he began learning how to make more fancy stuff. And but he also got other people to do his bits for him. And it's surprising, you know, that if you're making your living from that, you should be competent with the tools. But some people just aren't, you know, they're just not minded for this stuff. But they do have the mental acuity. They're optimized for coming up with ideas and narratives and argumentation and so on. And they're not interested in the other side of it, which I always was very interested in. And that fed into the channel. But as I say, with other people, it's not like that. And, you know, you can't expect someone to be good at everything or into everything.
Right. And that's where people like me come in. And the reason I say that, and this is because, like, I've always had an interest in, like, you know, design and doing things. Like, so I love graphic art stuff. I love Photoshop. I love Premiere Pro, After Effects. Like, I've started learning Blender. Thank you, Friendly Father, by the way. Shout out. And I started, you know, learning, like, how to do stuff with video. And it's like, you know, one thing that I noticed about myself, it's like I'm able to kind of like come up with cool aesthetics and do these things and throw together these assets and make things look cool and neat, right? You know, and that's how I got into doing like YouTube thumbnails. It's like I'm like looking at most people's thumbnails and I'm like, man, these look like garbage. I bet I could help. And I'm like, hey, Keith, can I make thumbnails for you? And he's like, yeah, of course. And so, like, you know, that's kind of like what I started doing. I started branching out and like, okay, other people don't know how to do X, Y, Z, right? I figure out how to do it. I show them how to do it, or I do it for them. And I'm like, here, you just do this, do that. And if you need a thumbnail, I'll give that to you. If you need your video edited, I'll do that for you. And if you need your audio edited, I can do that for you. And so that's kind of like how I managed to get into the place that I am right now. And that's like where I just kind of like I carry the water for the men who have the plans. You know, it's like I realized that I could be a lot more useful, not just like, you know, putting out my own ideas and putting together my own videos and own images. But I could also be very helpful to a lot of other, you know, content creators out there who, like you said, they have all the ideas, but they don't have like the skills to actually operate the stuff and get their ideas out there in a decent and cool looking way.
Yeah, I indeed. And it's useful to have someone like you around, frankly. I don't want to say it casually. It is a useful thing. And you said that your style is mainly influenced by Black Pigeon Speaks, now known as Felix Rex. Mm-hmm. Are there any other, I know that you're versatile, you can do different styles, but what other content creators would you say were particularly influential to you?
Okay, so,
aesthetically, I mean.
Aesthetically? Okay, definitely Black Pigeon Speaks. He was one of them. Another one is Friendly Father. A lot of his graphics have definitely inspired me. Like going way back, Slavros and Zeigler on Iron March, like their aesthetics blew me out of the water in terms of like the quality of their work. There's also another one, Spiro Patria. He's like a very obscure, NS, video maker, and he does some just incredible edits. I remember he did one, for a currently banned a British activist group that I'm not going to mention, and it was a fantastic video, and like that made me really want to get better at video editing. I'm trying to think who else inspired my aesthetic. I think those were the primary ones. I'm also influenced by certain art styles, like modern art styles. I'm very influenced by. I do like minimalism because like it's really easy to make it look good.
Yes. I would disagree. Actually, I think it takes quite in a way when the style is very minimalistic. It's the shittiness of it is immediately apparent if it's not done really well. In my experience, you have to learn to position things and the exact style of things. It all matters all the more, in my experience. What software are you familiar with, just so that people know? Because obviously we want people to contact you and seek you out. You obviously said Adobe After Effects. I think that's a staple for anything like this. What other software?
So I'm primarily proficient in Photoshop, Adobe Illustrator, I'm good with Blender. Like, I'm learning. I don't know how to like sculpt things really well, but I do know how to create videos in Blender and with 3D objects. And if you check out DVX Publishing, you can see a bunch of the video advertisements that I came up for them. That, by the way, DVX Publishing, it's great. The guy who runs it is awesome, and he's always been a good guy. And he puts out some really good books too. And those video book advertisements are really good. I also like, I'm good with Premiere Pro and After Effects and, Audacity. Funny enough, I'm really good with Audacity. I've tried to get into Adobe Audition, but man, I don't really get it.
No, I never liked that. The one that I use there is, SoundForge. I've always used SoundForge for... since the late 90s. Adobe Audition is... never liked it. Audacity I use sometimes for the background audio removal tool that I have. Very, very good.
The noise removal is so good. But, you know, and here's another thing I have to say about, like, equipment and stuff like that, is that you can actually make stuff sound really good with really cheap equipment. Like, I'm using a Snowball microphone, right? And I just learned, like, about the microphone. I learned about what software, you know, free software. I used Audacity to edit my audio after I recorded it to make it sound like a compression mic. Before I came into this conversation with you, like I made sure to apply all the proper filters for this particular mic and like set up the compression and check it to make it sure it sounded right. Like, you know, there's ways to make stuff sound good even when you don't have a lot to work with.
Yeah. And another thing is that, you know, a good mic doesn't cost much. You know, the Blue Snowball is a good one. I had the Blue Yeti for a while. The one I'm using now is the Zoom H2N, which I've been using for years. I think people are often quite intimidated about this because it really does matter. It matters. Audio quality matters far more than image quality, because people are going to be listening and they're going to be struggling to listen if you're not using a good mic.
That is so true. I always say
the only thing you need to know is just buy the Zoom H2N. It will work in any situation. You can do it for streaming, use it with a camera, use it in a studio, use it on location. It doesn't matter. But if you're just going to be streaming, then yeah, the Blue Snowball is probably the best one.
Yeah. I mean, it's just fine. I mean, it's like just find out what decibels should vocal be at, right? Or like your audio, like your speaking voice, like what should that be at? And just like level it out, like bring all the lows down to there, bring all the highs down to there. And like, you know, especially if you're making YouTube videos, it's not going to matter whether or not you're using stereo or mono that much. It's just going to matter that like you can hear it no matter what device it's on, right? If it's on your TV in the living room, you need to be able to hear it well. If it's on your laptop, you need to be able to hear it well. If it's, you know, on the speakers of your phone, you need to be able to hear it well. So like you have to keep that in mind whenever you're doing audio.
Oh, definitely. Okay, well, is there anything else that you'd like people to know or anything you'd like to say?
Sure. So if you ever want to hire me, of course, and my primary wheelhouse is doing thumbnails, but I also do posters. I do graphic design, like logos, and I do like banners and social media stuff like that. I do videos. I don't do videos as much as I used to do, but I still do them. I'm good with Blender. Do a lot of book advertisements right now. I also do book covers, and you can check out previously mentioned DVX Publishing for that. My website, if you want to see a more extensive portfolio, is Arbalest, you know, like the old medieval weapon. So Arbalest, editing.online. And then you can check out my Telegram channel that has where I routinely post my art. If you want to see really annoying takes that border on horny posting, go to Twitter. And then if you want to see my videos, you can go to Odyssey. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to shout out, lastly, Friendly Father, Keith Woods, and Dora the Aesthetic Explorer. Like these, Keith Woods obviously doesn't really make art, but the other two, like, they make some fantastic art, and they've definitely helped me grow a lot as an artist. So I highly appreciate them.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'll add that URL to the video description so that people can find you easily. All right. Well, thank you very much for appearing. I'll be back in 35 minutes with the final one tonight, which is Asha Logos. I know that a lot of people have been looking forward to that one. And in the meantime, Censored Anon, thank you for appearing on Millennial 8.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Everyone else, I will see you imminently. Well, not imminently, but 35 minutes. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. There are many ways to make a cash donation. Find all of these at millennial.com/donate. Your kindness will be warmly appreciated. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.